Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
John Feinstein joins us. He hits the national headlines with us every Monday at this time. John, always great to have you on. How are you?
I'm well, gentlemen. Free drinks, huh?
We know how to take care of our listeners.
How about if
John.
I bring my 7-year-old daughter? Would that count as bringing a non-dude?
We may enter into some legal problems if that were the case, being a 21 and up pedal tavern. But well, you need to find an event where you can bring your daughter.
She could probably talk the cops out of any issue.
I'm sure.
John, as you watched Urban Meyer read his statement and answer questions last week, what were you thinking?
Well, I was thinking, first of all, my only surprise in the penalty was that it was 3 games, not 2. I think when we talked about this a few weeks ago, I said I thought he'd probably be suspended for the first 2 walkover games and come back for TCU. So in order to look tough, they're not bringing him back for TCU, but he can run practice that week, all week, and the week before when they play Rutgers. So first of all, I wasn't surprised that it was a wrist slap. And second of all, it was, to me, fairly typical of a coach who is used to living in what I call the land of never wrong, which is a place where you are surrounded by people who tell you that you've never done anything wrong, no matter what you do. Urban Meyer's been there for a while, probably dating to his days at Bowling Green, much less Utah, Florida, and Ohio State, because he's always been a very successful coach. The only surprise to me was that when he had the chance to at least apologize to Courtney Smith, that he very defiantly passed on it. And it was making himself very clear in that last answer that he had no intention of apologizing to Courtney Smith. Of course, then 2 days later, after he was pilloried even by some Ohio State fans for that approach, he comes out with the statement, and again, remember, he wasn't around to answer questions, just a statement saying, okay, fine, I apologize to Courtney Smith, which he clearly he didn't write that statement. Somebody wrote it for him, and he signed off on it. So other than rabid Ohio State fans, I can't believe there's anybody out there who thinks that Urban Meyer has any genuine regret at all about what happened, other than, you know, having to deal with the embarrassment that he's put himself through in the last month.
Well, you know, he had the opportunity to mention her because he was directly asked about Courtney
exactly.
Smith, but I didn't hear her name mentioned once at all.
It wasn't.
And to me, it's not just Urban Meyer who should issue that statement 2 days
mm-hmm.
later.
No, it should have come from the president who was there. It should have come from Gene Smith. Gene Smith, by the way, one of the great survivors of all time.
Yeah.
He survived the Jim Tressel thing, surviving this, and he's still on the college football playoff committee. Now, Bill Hancock is a dear friend. I love Bill Hancock. Nobody doesn't love Bill Hancock. He's one of the best men I know. But if you are suspended by your own school for not doing your job properly, shouldn't you be removed from the college football playoff committee? The question isn't whether he can judge teams fairly. The question is whether he deserves that privilege.
John, this is a situation where if a press conference is going to be held, I want John Feinstein in the room and not such and such from bucknuts.com asking a question about how hard this has been on him to not be around his boys and be around his team and questions like that. This is where sports media is completely backwards. There should be a level of question that's asked in light of something like this that's simply not asked at these press conferences. And we're seeing more and more of this with college sports where everyone who covers that team isn't going to give out any information that's damning to that team. A classic example of that is Zach Smith getting a DUI, it being public record, and it not being reported until 2 weeks ago because no one in Columbus, they were all afraid to report that.
Yeah, no, it's not just a problem with college football and college basketball. And some of it is just human nature. Look, we all want to be liked. And asking a tough question in a press conference in particular. I try not to ask questions in press conferences because most often, not always, but most often, I can get a chance to talk to the person or people afterwards, you know, not on the podium, not with the TV cameras rolling, because frankly, I'm selfish. I don't want to share a good answer with other people. But you're right, you know, and remember, what happens in a situation like that is a PR guy or someone has control of the mic. You know, he'll point and he'll say, Chad, or he'll say, third row from the left, whatever. And they know, most of the time, especially in a situation like that, they know who might ask the tough question. So they're likely to steer away from that person to the guy who's going to say, hey, coach, how tough has it been being away from the boys? They know that person is apt to ask that kind of softball question. So it is a problem. The other problem with that press conference was, remember, Ohio State did not release the entire report, which included the damning fact that he asked someone how to remove any texts from his phone that were more than a year old. I mean, if that ain't a classic case of cover-up, I don't know what is. But that nobody knew that in that room because they had only released their three-page summary at that point, which did not include that fact.
I don't know why they decided to hold that, because Urban Meyer will be asked about that at his first presser 3 weeks from now, or whenever he returns again, right? I mean, it's going to be asked.
Here's the question, Jonathan. I thought about that because you make a very good point. Will he be asked about that, or will somebody intervene either before or after that question is asked and say, we're just here to ask football questions, to take football questions? Coach Meyer has dealt with the report. Coach Meyer has dealt with the suspension. He already had a press conference, which, of course, he did not. But somebody might do that. You know, that happens all the time. Well, we're just taking football questions, or we're just taking basketball questions. I have been in press conference situations like that where somebody's been involved in something embarrassing off the field or off the court or whatever it might be, or off the golf course. I mean, you know, Tiger Woods frequently after his accident, quote unquote, and the ensuing scandal, reporters were told when he walked into a press conference that if you ask a non-golf question, Tiger's just going to walk out.
Ryan Day has a chance to make a big national name of himself with these three games. He's going to be the head coach on game day. What opportunity does he have in front of him?
Well, the opportunity, I think, goes both ways, Jonathan, because if Ohio State does not play well in those games, if they don't dominate Oregon State and Rutgers, if they don't beat TCU fairly soundly, people are going to say it's because Urban Meyer wasn't there, that's at least part of the reason. Now, if he handles himself well with the public, if he can go a little out of the box, show some sense of humor perhaps, which football coaches rarely do, as you know, or if Ohio State plays extremely well in those three games, then I think he'd certainly position himself, especially because he's run the entire preseason as the head coach with Urban Meyer being absent. Then he might very well position himself to be in, you know, to follow in Tom Herman's footsteps, for example, who went from Ohio State to Houston and now is at Texas. So it is an opportunity for him, but if the team doesn't play especially well, then it probably hurts his chances to become a head coach next year as much as it helps. The guy who I think might have a real opportunity to make a name for himself here in the next this season is Matt Canada, who is the interim coach at Maryland, because I don't think DJ Durkin's coming back. And I think he's going to be the coach all season. And Maryland has about as favorable a schedule as it can have, given that it has to play Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, and Michigan State every year. And if he could somehow squeeze out 6-6 with a fairly weak non-conference schedule, they do open with Texas, but it's on a home field, not at Maryland, but down the road. Then he might put himself in position to maybe get the Maryland job if he wanted it, or get a head coaching job somewhere else.
John, you've opened up a great question for me to ask you now. If Matt Canada does a good job and Maryland hires him, is that okay for Maryland to do, considering his attachment to DJ Durkin? Or
right,
is it not close enough? This seems like a situation where you have to start anew and go hire someone from the outside.
Yeah, I think it is. But I will say this. if they have more success than is realistically to expect, a lot of the boosters will push for him to be the next coach. And remember, because he's never been a head coach before, he's going to cost less than if they have to go out and pay somebody big bucks to take that job. Because as we've discussed, it's not a job people are going to line up for, in my opinion. And the chances are good that if they try to fire DJ Durkin for cause, he's going to sue him for the $7.5 million left on his contract. If they don't fire him for cause, if they agree to pay him off the way they agreed to pay off the strength coach when he left, then it's going to cost them $7.5 million. And Maryland is still in terrible financial trouble, even with the move to the Big Ten.
The Tom Brady, Alex Guerrero, Bill Belichick drama continues this morning on WEEI in his weekly radio hit. Tom Brady hung up on the host because they kept asking him about Alex Guerrero.
And remember, it's a paid bit.
Yeah, no, this is the one time you hear from Tom Brady every week,
right?
And it's been that way for years.
He's well well paid.
Very,
oh, I'm sure
very
he is.
Well paid.
Doesn't he do a thing on Westwood One too on their Sunday night?
He does
games?
With Jim Gray.
Yeah, yeah. So those are the only two times all week we do hear from him. You're right, Chad.
This is a weird story. And his attachment to Alex Guerrero, just how they won't really address anything directly. And I know that's sort of Bill Belichick's MO, but this doesn't seem to be something that's really going away.
Yeah, I don't understand. The worst thing you can do, I always say this to people, and it, sometimes it's self-serving when I'm trying to get them to talk to me, but generally speaking, the worst thing you can do is refuse to answer a question, and certainly hanging up on somebody is refusing to answer a question. The more casual you sound about it, the more no big deal you sound about it, the more it's not a big deal. And, you know, if Brady were to say, yeah, you know, I talked to Bill and he said it was okay for Alex to travel on the plane. Everybody knows how much help Alex has been to me throughout my career, blah, 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 blah. And just kind of, you know, no big deal it, then it's no big deal. We're certainly not talking about it, right? But when he hangs up in the middle of a bit that he's paid to do, then it becomes a story people are going to talk about. I sometimes think I should retire, and a lot of people who read my stuff would agree with me, but I sometimes think I should just retire and hire myself out as a consultant to athletes, because they get the worst PR advice on a consistent basis, to the point where it's just, it boggles my mind sometimes. It's not that hard. It's not rocket science, and yet the number of times athletes, coaches, get it wrong is just amazing.
You can make millions off that Ohio State situation trying to help them with
you. You're right, Chad. I mean, I'd have been worth millions to them if they had hired me and listened to what I had to say on the subject. But they don't want to. Partly because guys like Brady, Urban Meyer, whomever it might be, they think they're above it all, and they are above it all as long as they keep winning.
So I find myself, for whatever reason, watching Yankees-Orioles last night on Sunday Night Baseball. And as I'm watching, I think to myself, this is something that I need to ask John Feinstein about. Dan Duquette, who is the GM of the Baltimore Orioles, he's blowing things up. You know, he's starting over.
Right.
He's making trades, trying to get rid of salary, and trying to start anew. I always find this to be an awkward situation for the GM and the manager. When they tried to go maybe one season too long, they've got a horrible contract with Chris Davis.
Yep.
But yet they're the ones resetting things to make their team even worse in the short run. And probably he's going to be handing that off to someone else. This seems like an awkward limbo to be in if you're in charge of an entire organization, to essentially hit the reset button, knowing you're hitting the reset button for someone else to take over.
Well, I think the Angelos family made a decision in June, July, that they're going to ride with Dan Duquette at least through this reset that you're talking about. And, you can defend that decision because Dan Duquette does have a track record of having had success in the past, whether it was in Montreal or Boston where he had some success, or in Baltimore where he came in along with Buck Showalter and they rebuilt the Orioles to the point where they were contenders for several years and just missed making the World Series a few years back. But you're right, mistakes were made. I'll say this. When Chris Davis signed that contract, I don't think anybody criticized it. I mean, maybe it was considered a couple years too long, but traditionally nowadays, it's almost like in the NFL, instead of getting your signing bonus at the front end of the contract, you get it at the back end because the money's guaranteed. But they made some mistakes, you're right. The thing that's killed them is they haven't drafted that well. And so they didn't have that much of a farm system when Chris Davis, you know, lost his batting eye, when the pitchers all of a sudden couldn't get anybody out, when they made a bad trade to, you know, sending Jake Arrieta to the Cubs. So I think what the Angelos family decided was Dan Duguette has had success. We're going to ride with him through this rebuild. I'm sure they sat him down and said, tell us what you're planning. And I don't think Buck Showalter's forgotten how to manage. I think if you had, you know, Casey Stengel and Joe McCarthy managing the Orioles right now, they'd still be horrible. And they really are horrible. They're en route to 110, 115 losses. I watch them a lot because I'm here in the D.C. area. I love going to Camden Yards because it's such a great ballpark. But Buck Showalter didn't just forget how to manage. He just has no players. And most specifically, he's got no pitchers. I mean, I was reading the game. I didn't watch the game, Chad. I'm not that much of a masochist last night. But I did.
I was the only one watching that game.
You might have been the list, but I was reading the game story this morning, and the Baltimore Sun beat writer was talking about the improved. I can't even remember who started for the Orioles last night. Who was it, Chad?
Dylan Bundy.
The improved.
I know way too much about this game last night
because he only gave up 4 runs in 5 innings.
Oh, I know.
And that was an improvement on his last 5 or 6 starts. That's how bad they are.
They'd sign up for that every night.
He also should have given up more. Like, he really had to fight to only give up those 4 runs.
Well, and that's, you know, and again, Dylan Bundy's a guy who was a big-time prospect a few years ago, and he's just been horrific this year.
John Feinstein, he joins us every Monday. John, always appreciate it. We'll catch up with you on Tuesday next week.
Next week, Labor Day holiday. Hope you guys have a great holiday, and I will look forward to talking to you on Tuesday. Yep. First day of school here.
Okay, enjoy.
Big day. All right, see you guys.
John Feinstein, every Monday with us here on the Midday 180.